Welcome to the Wednesday crossover edition of the Locked On Podcast Network. Alex Clancy, Bo Brock with Locked On Cardinals. We have Peter Bukowski from the Locked On Packers on the line. Two very different franchises over the last 60 or 70 years, but now kind of both in the have-nots category, but for very different reasons. Peter, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, I don't think Packer fans would really like to be lumped into the same category with the Arizona Cardinals. But unfortunately, at 4-6-1, the comparisons are hard to avoid at this point, and that is I think pretty startling for most, not just Packer fans, but people who follow the NFL on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's funny because we are in two polar opposite coaching situations, but both of them may end up with the same result at the end of the season. In Packerland, is it Mike McCoy's got to go now? Mike McCarthy. We're used to talking about Mike McCoy here, about how he should have been fired before he got hired. Mike McCarthy, sorry.
I think there are probably some Packer fans that would take Mike McCoy over Mike McCarthy at this point. I mean, that's how far the frustration has gone with Packer fans. But I think, you know, we had a discussion yesterday on the show about this what is the degree of certainty that you can have when you're talking about the Packers moving on from Mike McCarthy. And, I think it's fait accompli at this point. I think his tenure in Green Bay is five more games and, you know, six if they're really lucky. Because I don't think this is a team that has shown anything to suggest that they're going to be anything, even if they sneak into the playoffs. So that's where the focus has shifted for a lot of fans is, all right, who is next? And who is the candidate that can bring this team back to the glory that, you know, Mike McCarthy, who doesn't get enough credit for really regaining the glory that had been lost in the post-Mike Holmgren era of the 90s Packers.
I really feel like Billy Madison when the cute little chubby kid says, I can't wait to go to high school, Billy, to your Mike McCoy comment. Don't you ever say that.
Ever. How dare you?
That was just a disaster of a tenure for Mike McCoy. But it's so interesting to hear you talk about what the offseason, you know, goals are for this Packers team, because they're so similar to what we've been talking about, you know, for a long time here for the Cardinals, because I think the writing was on the wall a lot earlier. Of course, the Cardinals just two wins. One, I may add, on the road, that's one more win than the Packers have on the road this season. But it's just so many similarities between this team, these franchises, and it's going to be tough because so many teams are going to be seeking the same things this offseason. It's like, hey, we want an innovative, offensive-minded head coach, preferably younger, and we'd like him to take our franchise into the next step or into the 21st century as far as the NFL is concerned.
You know what's so funny about that too, and I was thinking about this yesterday as I was recording the podcast and thinking about writing about, you know, the perfect head coaching candidate for the Green Bay Packers. But if you go back and look at the last 10 years of Super Bowl winners, mm-hmm. how often it is not the hotshot offensive play caller. You look at Pete Carroll and the success that he's had in Seattle with a great defense. You look at Bill Belichick, Tom Coughlin. It's not Sean McVay in the Super Bowl every year. Even the year that the Falcons went to the Super Bowl and lost it in a game they obviously should have won, Dan Quinn, a defensive-minded head coach, is the guy there. Now, it took an all-time great offense and Kyle Shanahan performing wizardry on that team to get them there. But it is interesting to me that, more teams don't look at a Pete Carroll or a Bill Belichick or even a John Harbaugh and say, that's a model that I think can work. It's always, well, we need to score points, and that's the only way that we can win in the NFL. The Patriots' offense hasn't even been that good, and we're going to look up in January, and they're going to be in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, it really seems like those coaches, overall, Belichick, just a schemer. You look at the other, as you mentioned, Shanahan was a big piece to that puzzle for the Falcons. They really haven't been able to find it out, you know, afterwards. Who is the guy from USC that's taken over their offense?
Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, Steve Sarkisian.
Yep.
It's interesting, but also you look at, you know, you want to look over the past decade, you just have to look at recent history that shows that the NFL it's so much so different from where it was even 5 years ago. It's so different from when Pete Carroll and that Seahawks team was just crushing the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl. I just think it's as much as what the statistics prove, you're right there. Defensive-minded head coaches were kind of ruling Super Bowl victories. Nowadays, it is an offensive league.
Alex Clancy, Bo Brock, Locked On Cardinals. Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers. Peter, thank you. This has been my argument. Since 2000, there have been, out of 20, I think five offensive-minded head coaches, Mike McCarthy being one of them, that have won a Super Bowl. We start all the way back with Brian Billick and the Ravens. I think, and Bo is right. I mean, look at Monday Night Football 2 weeks ago. There were 265 points scored. All the yards and the touchdowns and everything, the rah-rah football, looks like it was a Big 12 game. But when it comes down to December and January and you have to run the ball in cold weather and play defense when there are stadiums that are not domes, Bo, I don't know why they're snicker there. That's a thing.
I know, because if you look at the last couple, and we're getting off track here, but
no.
When you look at the last couple Super Bowls, they're not like grinded out defensive matchups.
Because in essence,
yeah, but if you also look at how good the Kansas City Chiefs offense was for most of last season, and then at the end of the year, things bogged down a little bit, and then in the playoffs, they become predictable,
sure,
and they can't do the things that they wanted to do. And they lose to the Tennessee Titans, a team that wasn't even very good.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there is something to this, that these high-flying offenses get into the playoffs, and we've seen time and time again, you're not 450 in the playoffs. The Super Bowl is a weird aberration. You know, Tom Brady throws for 500 yards, and they lose. Even these really good offenses, remember that this is going way back now, I'm showing my age, but that Vikings team that with Randy Moss that just rolled through everyone.
Yeah.
Well, in the NFC Championship game, they didn't score 40 points. They needed a Morton Anderson field goal to win it, and he missed it. And it's these little plays here and there, nip and tuck. You just have to be able to execute, and that more than anything else. I think a team like the Chiefs or the Rams, they're so great because they execute consistently. It's not just that Sean McVay is awesome. It's that they execute consistently, and that is what's translatable. And that's the same thing with Bill Belichick. So,
sure.
I mean, the thing in this offseason that both the Cardinals and the Packers are going to be looking for is a coach that can create better execution from their team, both with scheme and discipline and the kinds of things that coaching has always been about. That's why it's funny. In 2018, we're talking about spread offenses and RPOs and all this stuff. But when you look at the basics of it, it's still fundamentals, it's still executing the play call, and it's still winning your individual matchup. That is what football has been for time immemorial, and the Packers and the Cardinals haven't done that player, coach, front office this season.
No, they certainly haven't, but I would say that the common theme as far as coaches and first-year head coaches that have failed are guys who are stubborn in their old school football mentality. They just happen to be defensive minded head coaches. Steve Wilks, you've got a guy, I don't know if this fits John Gruden, but John Gruden continues to hold on to, you know, a play calling scheme of a foregone era. It just seems to come with guys like Sean McVay or Anthony Lynn, guys that are having success. Not only, yeah, they're innovative offensive play callers, but they're also extremely talented as far as delegating and putting their other coaches, defensive coordinator Wade Phillips, in a position and empowering them to really take care of their side of the ball, whether it's special teams, defense, or offense. And I think that's important. I don't know if that has you can do a deeper dive and see if that has something to do if he's an offensive-minded guy or defensive-minded guy. It's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Peter, be careful what you wish for again, because we are living this right now with a defensive-minded head coach. I said all offseason on this podcast that a defensive-minded head coach is the way to go for the future for this team, because the defense of this team is way stronger than the offense as it was currently constructed. And I think all you needed was an offensive coordinator that could take over the play calling of the offense, so the head coach, the defensive-minded first-year head coach, didn't have to worry about it. We brought Mike McCoy in. That was supposed to be the guy, and he ended up being a dumpster fire. Would have been, you know, would have looked more like a Christmas tree than what we saw. I mean, there's not – so Steve Wilks didn't have that help on the side of the ball of which he was not most privy to, and that's why we're in the situation we're in now. So if you were to find a defensive-minded head coach, you need to have a surefire guy that can run the offense so the head coach can do his job in leading the team.
Well, let me be clear. I'm not advocating that for Green Bay. I'm just saying there are plenty of teams out there where it's not as imperative that they have, you know, this hotshot young coach or whatever. I mean, it doesn't even have to be a young coach. You always want your coach to be capable and you want them to be really smart. Everyone wants to find that coach. I think that the difference for Green Bay is their window is not what Arizona's window is. When you look at the Cardinals, they have Josh Rosen and theoretically have Josh Rosen for the next 15 years. So they can build something slowly. Same with the Browns. If they want to take a gamble on a Lincoln Riley, that is something that they can come back from in 3 years if it flames out. Green Bay doesn't have that luxury. Green Bay has to look at coaches that they think can not only be an improvement on Mike McCarthy, and I think that's a smaller list than a lot of Packer fans will have you believe, but they need a coach that is going to maximize what Aaron Rodgers can bring them for the next 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. And maybe that does mean bringing in a younger coach, keeping Mike Pettine in place, because I think Pettine has done a lot of really great things for this defense. And that's why I think there are three big names for Green Bay: Josh McDaniels, John DeFilippo, and Lincoln Riley. I think those are the names that make the most sense for this team, because they need to reengage their quarterback, who has lost faith in the coaching staff. He's lost faith in the players around him because he has two rookies starting at receiver instead of Randall Cobb and Geronimo Allison. So from that standpoint, Rodgers, you know, you want to talk about the lack of production or the lack of amazing Aaron Rodgers-ness that we've seen this season. I think the faith in his teammates and his coaching staff has a lot to do with it. And they need to find someone who's gonna rebuild that trust and that culture of winning that this team just doesn't have right now.
Yeah, and the Cardinals on their side, they're looking for a guy that can take Josh Rosen and maybe capture some of that his own Aaron Rodgers-ness going forward, looking for that play caller. Maybe Byron Leftwich is the Mike Pettine of the Arizona Cardinals full rebuild. We're joined by Peter Bukowski. Follow him on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. Locked on Packers. And I think the greatest game I've ever witnessed live was the Cardinals 26-20 win over the Green Bay Packers in the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers, the back-to-back Hail Mary passes. Was it Jeff Janis was
Jeff
on the receiving?
Jeff Janis.
Incredible. Yep. And I think both of us, or all three of us, would love to just kind of tap back into yesteryear and remember that. And we also want to remember when we were just ready to go. And now you can increase your performance and get extra confidence in bed. If you just listen up, BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready to go whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew, prescribed online, shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in a pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Try it free. Blue Chew is better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
Man, those were the days, Bo, when we were ready to go. You know? On the other side, we'll talk more with Peter Bukowski from Locked On Packers. Is Aaron Rodgers overrated? I'm going to ask him that in the last segment. And the coaching search continues throughout this season and into the offseason for both these teams. We're not exactly sure yet. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Locked On Podcast Network. Crossover Wednesday. Alex Clancy and Bo Brock from the Locked On Cardinals. Peter Bukowski from the Locked On Packers ahead of this weekend's matchup where the Cardinals go to Lambeau to face the Green Bay Packers. The Packers are the early line, a 14-point favorite. What makes you... This is worse than the Chiefs line, Bo. The fact that the Packers are waning. Obviously, granted, they are undefeated at home so far this season, but the fact that the Cardinals are getting two touchdowns from a team They can't put a win together, it seems. That's got to be just a knife to the heart.
To who?
To the Cardinals.
If the Cardinals are paying attention or are actually, like, deterred by a betting line at this point.
I'm not talking about the Cardinals themselves, well, Bo. I'm talking about us, the ones that were there covering the Cardinals.
I'm sorry, but, I mean, Vegas needs to get action somehow. I mean, if you lower the line, people are just going to be all over the Packers in this thing.
Peter, would you?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, yeah, go ahead. What does the line have to be for the betting public to bet on Josh Rosen, a rookie quarterback, at Lambeau Field against Aaron Rodgers? I mean, all of the information that we've seen this year on the Packers and all of the, you know, this is really just a half an hour or a 45-minute team that can't put wins together. And yet, what would the line have to be to take the Cardinals to cover the spread at Lambeau? I mean, it has to be double digits, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say about 10.5, like just a little over two scores. A field goal and a touchdown, but 14, I guess. I mean, I guess I'm not a bookmaker.
Somewhere closer to that. I mean, I think it opens at 14, so you get early action on the Cardinals. The line comes down, and then Packers bettors, you know, maybe push it back out. But you know, it's one of those things. So to this question, though, when you guys look at, you know, this roster, you can point to talented players at a handful of positions, but for the most part, you go, okay, they need help at a number of premier positions, including receiver. The secondary is not what it used to be outside of Patrick Peterson. The Sam Bradford contract that was signed before the season, as silly as it seems to most outsiders, signals to me that this front office thought that they were a better team than they were coming into the year. What did you guys think of this team coming into the year, and is this more or less the team you thought you were getting?
It was Steve Keim misidentifying a rebuild. He thought that he could push this core forward one more year, and despite, you know, coming off that 2015 season where they made it to the NFC Championship, they could rebound. You know, they had the big Super Bowl aspirations in 2016, 2017. They tried to get back and become playoff contenders again, and they fell horribly short of those expectations. So they thought, okay, so we've got this core. We've got a pass rusher in Chandler Jones. We've got a lockdown corner in Patrick Peterson. We've got a running back in David Johnson. We've got a wide receiver in Larry Fitzgerald. And we think we have a quarterback that can keep this team in contention. Well, Sam Bradford, I mean, he's fooled everybody. I mean, the guy is just, as far as marketing himself and getting paid, he's a Hall of Famer as far as fooling the NFL into believing that he's a good quarterback when his ceiling
is the greatest bank robber ever.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's 7 wins is his career high is as far as single season's concerned, 21 touchdowns. That's his career high in touchdown passes, and yet he continued to get paid. I think people are done finally being fooled by Sam Bradford, but shame on the Cardinals for being the final team to get fooled by that. And then you look at this team overall, their depth is just horrible. And you mentioned the wide receiver core. If your name isn't Christian Kirk or Larry Fitzgerald, it's 17 combined catches for the rest of this wide receiver core. That's just atrocious. And that's just been a continual just, I don't know, burying your head in the sand that this position needs help outside. Maybe it was Larry Fitzgerald provided them a crutch for so long, but it's gotten worse and worse each and every season, and the team needs to identify. Steve Keim, though, the general manager, is not the guy that should be making these decisions when they're going to have a ton of cap space next offseason. They're going to have high draft picks. Steve Keim has shown that he's not the guy to identify talent going forward.
We'll see, and it's funny. A beautiful thing about doing a podcast with two people is we don't always have to agree, and it makes for a great podcast. I completely disagree with what Bo just said about Sam Bradford. I think, and we've talked about this a lot over the last few months, is that nobody wanted to come play here. Nobody wanted to come coach here. So I think, in my opinion, so the Cardinals didn't get their first shot. They didn't get their first choice head coach or quarterback. Kirk Cousins chose elsewhere. Alex Smith got traded. There were a couple other names that were strewn about in the area. At the point of signing Sam Bradford, they had 0 quarterbacks on the roster under contract. So the fact that Sam Bradford was still available, they're like, you know what? We need a quarterback. We need a singular quarterback. Mike Glennon's not going to be our starter. They ended up signing him later. And they didn't realize that they were going to be able to move up and draft Josh Rosen because they thought that he was going to be gone by the time that they moved up to 10 to get him.
It's a lot of speculation right there.
I think that they had their third or fourth choice. And that's why Sam Bradford became a Cardinal. Honestly.
Well, it seems like Steve Wilks was their third or fourth coaching choice as well. And right. And back to your point about the receivers, I was looking at the depth chart the other day and was thinking after Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk that this was the cast of a Netflix show that I didn't watch because I was trying to figure out who some of these guys were. I think there's some interesting parallels, Josh Rosen with Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know if you guys saw it. Around draft time, Rodgers did a video with Josh Rosen where Rodgers said, you know, there are times when practicing can be monotonous and that he would sometimes just give himself little challenges and basically admitted to goofing off during practice just to stay engaged. It seems like Josh Rosen is the kind of quarterback who is highly intelligent, highly cerebral, and needs a coach who's going to challenge him and engage him intellectually. Rodgers is exactly the same way and is, you know, as we discussed, the kind of quarterback that needs that from a coach. It sounds like Byron Leftwich versus Mike McCoy is doing that a little bit more, and maybe it's because Leftwich played the position and sort of knows which buttons to press. But if you're looking at what this coaching staff has done with Rosen, do you think they've handled him the right way, at least since Mike McCoy's been shown the door?
Yeah, they're trying to get back on track, and everything we hear from Byron Leftwich has been 100% spot on. I mean, not only does he want Josh Rosen to utilize his rookie season and learn from every situation, good and bad, but he wants to set Rosen up for the long term. He wants him to be a successful quarterback in the NFL for 10 to 15 years, and he draws from his own experience as being a top 10 pick himself, playing quarterback in the league for 10 seasons. Byron Leftwich absolutely, I believe, is the guy to kind of walk hand in hand with Josh Rosen into the future. Is he going to be put in a position to be successful by his head coach? I can't necessarily answer that question with 100%, you know, positivity. As far as Steve Wilks is concerned, he's a conservative by nature, defensive minded head coach. Is he going to let Byron Leftwich, a young play caller, kind of flourish and do the things that he needs to do to make sure Josh Rosen's successful? That's a whole different question. But I really like what Byron Leftwich has said. He's won all the press conferences. As far as his game calling is concerned, I think he was handicapped by what was installed by Mike McCoy. And I'll be interested to see if the Cardinals keep Leftwich in a position of play calling beyond this season, what he'll do in the future. I really like what Leftwich has done. Of course, he was behind the eight ball as far as getting a hold of the offense in week eight. And the personnel issues, as far as what Steve Keim has given, as far as wide receivers and the offensive line, it's just a tough hand that he's been dealt. But I like Byron Leftwich, and I would love to see him stick with Josh Rosen in some capacity, whether it's his OC. Who knows? He could be the frickin' head coach of this team next year.
Anything's up in the air. Everything's up in the air.
But to answer your question, I really like Byron Leftwich.
I'm wondering as you're speaking, and this hadn't occurred to me before, but it seems like you're kind of making the case for a coach like John Harbaugh to come in and potentially say, okay, offense, Byron Leftwich, you got this. I'm going to let you handle it.
Yeah.
I'm going to play a CEO role. And, you know, the Ravens, obviously, that was a defense first team, but part of that was because they never had a good quarterback and they never had really – you know, they won the Super Bowl with Jim Caldwell, for crying out loud. Byron Leftwich might be the best offensive coordinator John Harbaugh ever had in a situation like that. So, I mean, assuming that is someone who's available and he's, you know, interested,
yeah,
it sounds like that's the case you're making for a coach like that.
Yeah, and I think a veteran head coach would probably be the best bet for this team. If you're going to keep some of the key veterans that you have, some of the guys that we mentioned, Patrick Peterson, if he could reconcile with this franchise after his trade request earlier in the season, John Harbaugh would be great. And it also ends our argument about offensive and defensive-minded guys because he's a special teams guy. I mean, he's right. Just a delegator, as you were kind of pointing out, and you're right. I mean, Byron Leftwich, if he's empowered by his head coach and John Harbaugh to really take this offense and make it what he wants of it and take Josh Rosen to the next level, that's going to be great. And I really appreciated what you said. It is interesting because Rosen and Rodgers have been connected since the pre-draft process. And I liked what Rosen had to say recently about how a lot of people just want to see these rookie-scale contracts. They see these rookie quarterbacks that struggle, where it's a Jared Goff or it's a Mitchell Trubisky, take the next step in the next season. And Rosen pointed out, I was like, it doesn't automatically mean just because I'll be playing and probably starting next year for this team that I'm not going to be taking more lumps. You know, he realizes that it's going to be more work put into it than just showing up for work.
Well, and that's an expectation in the fan base, right, too, that you have to understand that, Matt Nagy is unique. Mm-hmm. And he is not going to make, that is not going to be the case for every, and Sean McVay is unique and is not going to take everyone in year two and make them something else. Look at Carson Wentz. He did it. Okay, but that's not normal and hasn't been normal. Someone like Patrick Mahomes didn't play year one and in year two is able to make that leap. Josh Rosen is still a young kid. And you mentioned Christian Kirk earlier. I wanted to ask you about that. Josh Rosen, by the way, doesn't turn 22 until February, which is crazy to me. But I loved Christian Kirk coming out of college. In fact, as soon as I saw him basically get on campus at Texas A&M, I was like, that's an NFL receiver, and I want that dude on my team. What is your impression of him, and how has he grown? Can he be the heir apparent to Larry Fitzgerald? Not that he's ever going to be that good, but in terms of being a number one receiver for this offense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with Larry Fitzgerald, there aren't many number one receivers that look like him in this day and age. You know, there's not many. Michael Thomas, I guess, is a guy that you could equate to Fitz. Fitz was never like a burner like Christian Kirk is. What the thing that Christian Kirk is he's a game changer. He's a guy that the defense will always have to account for. And that's something that the Cardinals haven't had in a long time from the wide receiver position. And if they did a couple years ago, it was John Brown or J.J. Nelson. John Brown couldn't stay healthy, whether it be the sickle cell trait or otherwise. And J.J. Nelson can't put his two hands together with the football in between it. So with Christian Kirk, we've seen plays like against the Raiders 2 weeks ago. He caught a little wide receiver screen and took it to the house 59 yards before anybody could blink. Bo and I were sitting in the press box like, oh, he's gone. Like, and that's something that not a lot of players in this league have, let alone a guy from a number one wide receiver position. So it's exciting. And if you have a guy come in as a rookie receiver with a rookie quarterback, it's a link that could work for, a decade if the money's right and if both those guys produce and stay healthy.
Well, that's the benefit of having a quarterback a receiver who is just get him the ball. And so with a young quarterback, you can say, receiver screens, that works. Slants, hitches, the little stuff that makes the throw a little bit easier. But we've seen Josh Rosen, I mean, they've been letting him chuck it. And I think that's really important. I mean, the point that you made about Byron Leftwich saying, let's have you learn from every situation. Letting Josh Rosen and not handcuffing him and saying, we want you to only throw the 8 yards when we need 10, if that's what's open, no, fire it. And let's see what happens. And then let's learn from, okay, what did you see here? Why did you make this decision? Because that's the only way that you grow. I think so often we handcuff these young quarterbacks and don't let them be what they've been since they were 10. And what I've been really impressed with is Josh Rosen's ability to learn from those mistakes. And I don't know what your impression of it is, but it seems like he's the kind of quarterback that once he makes a mistake, he's probably not going to make that specific mistake again.
Alex Clancy, Bo Brock, Locked On Cardinals, Peter Bukowski, Locked On Packers. On the other side, we'll wrap up and actually talk about the game a little bit that's coming up on Sunday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Crossover Wednesday, the Locked On Podcast Network. Alex Clancy, Bo Brock from the Locked On Cardinals, Peter Bukowski from Locked On Packers. There's a game this Sunday that we haven't talked about yet. And who would have thought that through 12 weeks, the Cleveland Browns would have a better record than the Cardinals and be tied with the Packers with the same record? Who would have thunk it? But that's the case. The Cardinals go to Lambeau on Sunday. It's status quo for us. We'll take the lead here. I mean, it's play the Chargers last week, get punished. This week, we talked about yesterday, Bo and I did on the podcast. This is the Cardinals are the get right game for every team that they play. And the Packers need a get right game if the RELAX Aaron Rodgers will show up again and they win five straight in an effort to make the playoffs this season. So I see this as just being a decimation of the defense that has given up already. They're tired. They're, you know, angry that the offense can't stay on the field. And I predicted yesterday that Marquise Valdes-Scantling will have a career day with whoever is going to start. Who's the guy that they brought back, Bo? With Benny Benwickery that they cut?
Oh, David Amerson?
Yeah, David Amerson's probably going to be on him alongside Patrick Peterson defending Devontae Adams. So Marquise Valdes-Scantling will have an absolute day on Sunday in a rout by the Packers. Bo?
I'm just kind of curious because when you look at the two teams kind of in the same category as the Cardinals this season that the Packers have squared off with, they beat the Bills, but they win 22-0. I think if you watch that game, I did tune in quite a bit for fantasy implications, but you know,
I'm sorry to hear that.
I would have said that not from the Bills side of the ball, but I would have said that the Packers should have won that game more handily than even 22-0, which is crazy.
Yeah,
and then you look at
45-0,
and you look at the Niners game. I mean, that was a game that they had to come back and win 33-30. Was it a Monday Night Football contest? And mm-hmm. the Packers have certainly been playing down to their competition. And with that being said, and looking at the struggles lately, I still believe that the Packers are going to roll. And Alex is absolutely right that this is going to be a get-right game. Aaron Jones is going to go off at the running back position.
Oh, my God.
We watched a quarterback in Phillip Rivers complete 25 consecutive passes last season. I'm absolutely terrified at the thought of what Aaron Rodgers can do against this Cardinals defense. Don't be fooled by their pass defense, which ranks in the top 10, because it's not that good. And Aaron Rodgers is going to have a field day, and this is just going to be absolutely exactly what Alex said, a get-right game. And if we're talking about the my bookie line on this, I'm taking the Packers.
Yeah, I mean, if it was in...
Tell me I'm wrong.
No. I mean, if it wasn't in Lambeau, I mean, I think that maybe it would drop to, you know, 10.5, like we had said, and Peter alluded to it. Maybe the number will come back to the mean a little bit, but yeah. Peter, go ahead. What do you think?
Well, the problem, guys, is I've been predicting get-right games for the Packers all season. And this is one of those things, right? One of the times that you say it, you're going to be right. And I was right about it in Miami, and that's the recent game you can point to and say, oh, yeah, this defense is capable of just beating the hell out of a bad quarterback. And I don't think Josh Rosen is a bad quarterback per se. I think Mike Patton and what he can do in terms of disguising defenses, I think it's going to be really hard for the Cardinals to score points in this game. I don't think it's going to be as easy for Green Bay to score in this game as you're saying, but to your point about Phil Rivers, I mean, the guy almost didn't throw an incompletion. And Aaron Rodgers, who has had some issues with accuracy this season, I think part of that is the injury. I think part of that is mechanics. And I think part of that is frankly the inconsistency with these rookie receivers. I love the point about Marquez Valdes-Scantling because David Amerson, even in his prime, was like a 4.6 guy. And Valdes-Scantling is a 4.3 guy. So, and Rodgers has loved to take shots this season. He's been, in fact, a little bit more enamored with shot plays than I would even like, eschewing, you know, 8 yards on 3rd and 7, which generally speaking, I'm opposed to. But I think this could be the game where they hit some of those big plays. You know, you guys talked about the Janis Hail Marys in that playoff game. Rodgers does have a history of chunk plays against this team, and even his playoff debut. That was the game I thought you were going to say, the greatest game you ever saw live. I would have assumed you were talking about 51-48 or whatever game or whatever that game was. Back
I was
in the day,
in the sports
so.
Media back then, but I do remember that it was incredible. Him and Warner were going shot for shot. It was awesome.
Speaking of not throwing an incompletion, I think Kurt Warner had like 3 in that game. Right. It was just absolutely incredible. That's not going to happen on Sunday. I think we can agree on that, guys. But I think you're right. I think Green Bay wins. I think they win handily. I don't think it's going to make anyone in Green Bay feel any better, nor should it. And I think that's just where we are in the season with this team. And I think it's where you guys are in the season with your team. And maybe you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. You might have fans at this point not only cheering for losses but cheering for blowouts just so that Steve Wilks is not the coach next year.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bo. You love this.
No, I mean, that's been an argument that we've had on the show. I don't think anybody within the Cardinals locker room has thoughts of improving their draft pick. They're gonna have a top pick, no doubt about it.
As far as
you know, putting the nails in the coffin as far as Wilks and Keim, they really just set themselves up beautifully to do that themselves and just let it happen organically.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think that it's gonna be, you know, people, you know, willingly, you know, missing assignments and, you know, them playing to lose and get crushed. I think it's just going to happen. I mean, we've seen it. We were fooled that this team was building momentum in a 12-point loss to the Kansas City Chiefs where they held that high-powered offense to 26 points. But that was just that was fool's gold. That was a team coming off a bye week and a tired Chiefs team. And, man, have they come back to reality, a harsh reality the last couple of weeks, and most recently a 45-10 clunker against the Chargers. So maybe the Cardinals come out like they have in a couple games this year and they take an early lead, but man, don't expect that to last very long.
Yeah, it's Peter, to your point with Steve Wilks and Keim, both said it correctly. They are the next job for the Cardinals front office and Michael Bidwell is to show all that the Cardinals will have going into the offseason. They'll have a top three pick. They'll have all this money to spend, and if you want to have a GM come in, whether it be first time or veteran GM that's been out of the game for a little bit, be like, hey, you want to make your mark on a city that's really never won anything? Look at the tools you have for your first year. You can do whatever you want with this team, and you have two Pro Bowl defenders and a Pro Bowl running back. So do what you want. So we'll see if they, and we're not going to get into the Steve Keim thing. We both think that he should be gone. Steve Wilks, we're at different ends of the spectrum with that. But Peter Bukowski, thanks for joining us, man. This has been a fun Wednesday crossover here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Hopefully the game is close to as fun, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, neither will we. I mean, there'll be fantasy implications. Now I got my fantasy juices flowing that I'm going to start Marquise Valdes-Scantling after I put out such a huge prediction for him.
Would you call him Marquez just once?
It's Marquez?
Yeah.
It's actually Marquez.
Okay, so all of us are. Can we break this down? I got a grease board here somewhere.
Just call him MVS.
MVS
is what Packer fans call him, and Equanimeous St. Brown is.
Okay, now you're just showing off. Okay,
EQ is fine. EQ is fine.
Okay, great. That's on my stereo too. Thanks, Peter. We'll appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, tomorrow we will break this game down a little bit more, what the Cardinals can do in an effort to save some face, but probably inevitably lose. Alex Clancy, Bo Brock.
Just a final score. I mean, that's all we have left, and it's not going to be pretty.
We'll check you guys tomorrow.